Remember, remember the
6th
of November.
Yes, please do.
Pretty please.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Not in Georgia.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in
from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ in Cottage Grove on Queso. Now heard in Eugene, Oregon on KEPW. Welcome aboard. Columbus, Ohio's WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Grand Rapids, Michigan's WPRR, in New Orleans on WHIV, in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, Seattle's KODX, Red Bluff and Redding, California's KFOI, Round Mountain, California's KKRN, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950. KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for your listening convenience on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Workforce Rising, and Detour Talk, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I am Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining me. I hope you are buckled up. I know I'm not. Election day is Tuesday, November 6th, and could be the most important election day in this nation's history. Then there's the fallout you can expect to come hard on November 7th and beyond. So I hope you've got some energy beyond election day. We're going to need a lot of energy on Tuesday, but there's a whole bunch of stuff to come thereafter regarding the elections, regarding counting those elections, regarding Donald Trump's response to those elections. If you think this is over after November 6th, think again. But still, for today, we're just focusing on November 6th. Ride-sharing companies Lyft and Uber are providing highly discounted and in many cases free rides to the polling place on Tuesday. So no excuses, people. Time to vote. If you haven't already, vote like your life depended on it, because in many cases, it very well may. And we need to see presidential election level turnout on Tuesday to send a clear message to the powers that be about what is going on amidst our ongoing Donald Trump GOP national emergency, and to try and counteract the massive attempts at voter suppression and other dirty tricks that are now ongoing around the nation in Tuesday's absolutely critical midterm election. So all hands on deck, people. No excuses. But if you have one, I might like to hear from you a little bit later in the show. If all goes well, I'll try to open up the phones a little bit later. I would love to hear from folks who have already voted or who plan to vote on Tuesday, but who normally don't vote in midterm elections. Why are you choosing to vote this year? I'd love to hear why. And as last week, I'd also like to hear from folks who don't plan to vote and why the hell that would possibly be. Our phone number, if you want to get in line now, I got a bunch of stuff to get through here first, but if you want to queue up, it's 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We are live in the studios today. Now, I don't do predictions, but all things being equal, there would be a Democratic tsunami on Tuesday at the gubernatorial level, at the U.S. House level, and yes, even the senatorial level. But alas, all things are not equal, which is just one of the reasons I don't do predictions. There are too many unknowns right now in this election. Nobody knows what the makeup of the electorate, will actually look like on Tuesday. There is just no reliable model for this sort of election. I know you're going to hear a lot of pundits and geniuses on television telling you what to expect. You should not believe them. We've never had an election like this one in the country, at least not in modern times, since the existence of modern polling. We also haven't seen as many attempts at voter suppression in as many states as we are seeing this year, at least not since before the passage of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, since that supposedly ended the Jim Crow era in this country. As we discussed on Friday's show with the great Ari Berman, you can download that and a bunch of important shows from last week for free at bradblog.com or here at kpfk.org in our archives if you missed any of those shows last week and would like to avoid the desperate punditry and predictions, in other words, guesswork, that you'll be subject to between now and the time that computers, yes, computers, in all 50 states begin tabulating results as of the close of polls on Tuesday. Then, of course, there are other known unknowns, such as the potential for mischief or error or hacking or malfeasance or just plain failure of our nation's voting and tabulation and registration infrastructure. Just one example today from the Boston Globe. Hackers have ramped up their efforts to meddle with the country's election infrastructure in the weeks leading up to Tuesday's midterms, sparking a raft of investigations into election interference. That, according to internal U.S. intelligence documents obtained by the Boston Globe, the hackers have targeted voter registration databases, election officials, and networks across the country, from counties in the Southwest to a city in the Midwest, according to Department of Homeland Security election threat reports that have been reviewed by the Globe. The agency says publicly all the recent attempts have been prevented or mitigated, but internal documents show hackers have had, in fact, quote, limited success. The recent incidents, ranging from injections of malicious computer code to a massive number of bogus requests for voter registration forms, have not been publicly disclosed until now, until today, the Boston Globe reports, just hours before polls open on Election Day. Well, hooray. Federal agencies have logged more than 160 reports of suspected meddling in U.S. elections since August 1, according to the documents. And, of course, these are only the ones that they have been able to notice. The pace of suspicious activity, they report, has picked up in recent weeks, up to 10 incidents a day, and officials are said to be on high alert. A DHS spokesman attributed the recent increase in reported incidents to more vigilance and better communication between state offices and his agency. The daily DHS election threat reports compile initial on-the-ground accounts of possible interference, but make no conclusion about who is behind the attacks. However, the reports reviewed by the Globe describe most of the recent incidents as, quote, foreign-based. The Globe obtained these unclassified reports, which are distributed to law enforcement agencies and election security officials across the country, for a period covering 8 consecutive days in late October. They also refer back to problems going since the beginning of August. In late August, for example, Vermont officials found that hackers were scanning their voter registration databases and looking for vulnerabilities. That, according to Vermont's Secretary of State. Reports from the last 2 weeks show that states have flagged dozens of new attempts by foreign hackers to penetrate their systems, steal voter data, access email accounts. Investigators have been able to draw connections between several of the attempted hacks in different states, so a coordinated effort. That, according to a November 1 DHS bulletin, so just days ago. This is hot, fresh stuff. In the last week of October alone, at least a half a dozen states report barrages of malicious login attempts on voter databases and election security systems, according to the reports. One state, which is not named in the documents, successfully blocked over 51,000 login attempts from a foreign countries in just one 24-hour period. The next day, a different state fended off 52,000 attempts. Internal intelligence documents show some of the cyber meddling efforts have had, quote, limited success, such as on October 23, a senior official in charge of a state's election process. They don't name the official, but sounds like a pretty high up official. That official had a personal social media account that was hacked and re-registered to a Russian email provider. The report does not list the state or include other identifying details, so that's all we have to go on. There are other troubling notes from DHS in this Globe report. So, yes, threats to our electoral system are very real and very much ongoing. From outside, from foreign nations and hackers as well here in the U.S., and from insiders like voting system contractors and, yes, election officials. Our election, our electoral system, this voting, tabulation, registration, all of that is on computers. It is remarkably fragile because it's entirely computer-based. So threats can come from anywhere, and even discovery of manipulation of the system is very rare. We often don't know about it when it does happen. We don't hear about it when officials learn about it, but the public doesn't know. Often officials don't even know about it, particularly when it comes to election results. Since the DHS admitted for all it claims through an anonymous source talking to the Boston Globe there, for all that it claims to be doing now, we know that DHS nor anybody else ever bothered to actually count the ballots from 2016 or forensically investigate the voting systems after that election, despite all the questions about it. We will likely never know whether Donald Trump was legitimately elected or not. And then there are other folks who simply pretend that their system is being hacked in order to distract you from real problems, which they themselves are actually responsible for. And sadly, as we discussed several times during several shows last week, the corporate media are so unfamiliar with how these systems actually work, and they have learned so little about them, that they will report whatever it is that election officials and voting system vendors tell them to say, no matter how the science and the actual evidence actually shows something completely different. An example that is now taking place. All right. In 2016, during the presidential election, when the U.S. intelligence community warned of possible and attempted foreign manipulation of the U.S. voting system, of its registration and tabulation systems, just like today, the Department of Homeland Security made resources available to state election officials to try and harden systems against potential interference from hackers. Those state and federal elections are all constitutionally administered at the state level. DHS had offered back in 2016 to help states by scanning their systems for vulnerabilities and advising them on how to safeguard against those vulnerabilities in their computer voting and registration systems. But one state, the state of Georgia, which uses 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems across the entire state and wildly vulnerable and sensitive electronic poll books on election day at the polls, and with their entire voter registration database and ballot programming files and even voting system passwords found not long ago to have been left online without any password protection for months in the lead up to the 2016 election. And then again, last year before the special U.S. House election near Atlanta, Georgia's congressional 6th congressional district, before that got all that attention. Only Georgia, back in 2016, told the DHS to keep their hands and eyes off of the state's election system. Republican Secretary of State Brian Kemp in 2016 insisted that DHS not provide assistance to them, and then he later falsely charged that Obama's federal government had attempted to hack Georgia's voting system. This was back in 2016. You can check the headline from Wall Street Journal, December 8, 2016. Georgia says someone in U.S. government tried to hack state's computers housing voter data. It was all complete nonsense, and yet the media ran with it anyway. It would be another 6 months, not until June of 2017, before the inspector general found that the entire claim from Kemp was utter nonsense. The AP headline story at the time in June of 2017, quote, "Federal review debunks Georgia election hack accusation." They found there was absolutely nothing to it. It was 6 months after Secretary of State Kemp had made these claims about the Obama administration trying to, quote, breach our firewall. And based on the investigation from the IG, they were unable to substantiate any of the allegations that DHS had attempted to scan or infiltrate the Georgia computer networks. The IG wrote, rather, the evidence demonstrated normal and appropriate use of Georgia's public website. So the charge was completely false, made by Brian Kemp, who oversees this 100% unverifiable voting system in his state and would not allow anyone to try to help him out with the vulnerabilities. Now, Brian Kemp, who is still the Secretary of State of Georgia, now he is running at the same time to become Georgia's next governor, and he is overseeing his own election contest against Democrat Stacey Abrams. The two are believed to be in a dead heat contest, even with allegations that Kemp is unlawfully purging voting rolls and rejecting legitimate registrations and absentee ballots that have been sent in. He's had at least two federal court rulings against him in just the past week, telling him to knock it off. But now, after a story that broke over the weekend, late Saturday, and this story found that the state's voter registration database online has been left wildly vulnerable to hacking and manipulation right now, not back in 2016, but right now, today, as we speak, hours from polls opening on Election Day, with voter registrations found to be modifiable or deletable right now online. Kemp is, with all of that, Kemp is once again claiming falsely that the Democratic Party is attempting to hack Georgia's election. On Sunday, you may have seen the headlines because it was covered everywhere. Georgia Secretary of State, this from CNN, Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp has set off a political firestorm when his office, 2 days before an election in which he is a candidate, announced on Sunday morning that it had opened an investigation into the Georgia Democratic Party in connection with what it described as an attempted hack of the state's voter registration system. And I heard about this everywhere. I started hearing from people, oh my God, the Democrats are trying to hack into Georgia's system. This began on Sunday morning. It actually started on Saturday, but on Sunday morning, Kemp's office released a statement claiming there had been, quote, a failed attempt to hack the state's voter registration system, and that the Secretary of State's office in Georgia had opened an investigation into the Democratic Party of Georgia on Saturday, claiming that it had to do with certain cyber crimes. Now, by late Sunday, long after the baseless Democrats are hacking Georgia headlines had gone all over the place on the Sunday news shows and everything else, finally, by Sunday night, CNN said they obtained a series of emails from the Secretary of State's office that was supposedly led to these accusations. The emails refer to findings by a voter who had said he had discovered potential vulnerabilities in the state's voter information page and its online registration system. That voter took his concerns to the Georgia Democratic Party through their voter protection hotline to try to alert authorities about this. That according to his lawyer. And his lawyer told CNN that the man who discovered these vulnerabilities on the Georgia website is not affiliated with any political party. He said the man has some software background, but he is not a hacker. Now, had CNN or any of the other corporate outlets bothered to actually read the exclusive from Jordan Wilkie, who we had on this show about 2 weeks ago, over at the independent outlet, whowhatwhy.org, they would have known right away that Kemp's story, when he put it out on Sunday morning, was complete and utter bunk. As Jordan Wilkie and Timothy Pratt reported over at Who, What, Why, 2 days before the midterm elections, a series of security vulnerabilities have been discovered that would allow even a low-skilled hacker to compromise Georgia's voter registration system and, in turn, the election itself. It is not known how long these vulnerabilities have been in place or whether they have already been exploited. Just before noon on Saturday, a third party provided Who, What, Why with an email and document sent from the Democratic Party of Georgia to election security experts highlighting massive vulnerabilities with the state's My Voter page and its online voter registration system. According to the document, it would not be difficult for almost anyone with minimal computer expertise to access millions of people's private information and potentially make changes to their voter registration, including canceling it. In this election and during the primaries, voters have reported not showing up in the poll books, being assigned to the wrong precinct, and being issued the wrong ballot. All of that could be explained by a bad actor or several bad actors changing voter registration data. And at this point, there may be no way of knowing what happened. Who, What, Why reports that Georgia's registration system is actually run by a Connecticut-based private contractor named PCC Technologies. They actually have contracts to manage voter registrations. Voter registration systems for Georgia and 14 other states. And I don't yet know what those other states are, but they have done a terrible job in the state of Georgia. These vulnerabilities, as detailed by Wilkie and Pratt, are horrible. It makes it frighteningly easy to change or even delete pretty much every voter registration in Georgia as I read this. Our friend, the world-renowned computer security and voting system expert, Hari Hursti, is quoted in one of the articles over there. He has hacked just about every voting system out there. He told Who, What, Why, quote, "This is the equivalent of having the bank safe door open. And while it's open, you have the bank safe codes posted on the door. People who have built this have no idea what they're doing," said Hursti. Long story short, the man who discovered the vulnerability reported it to Democrats. Democrats reported it to federal intelligence officials and to Brian Kemp. And then Kemp released a statement saying that Democrats had hacked Georgia's voter registration system. And the media ran with it on the eve of the most important elections of probably any of our lifetimes. So some guy was doing the right thing and letting the state know about it. Brian Kemp, he let them know about it, not publicly, so as not to tip off the world about this insane vulnerability. And the thanks he got was that Brian Kemp goes public and says Democrats are trying to hack the election. It's just mind-blowing. I'll link over to the actual stories at Who, What, Why that led to all of these other stories you're seeing today. But Kemp's office is doing is disingenuous, according to the lawyer for the nonprofit Coalition for Good Government. That's Bruce Brown is the attorney. He noted that at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, he had emailed a former governor of Georgia in their capacity as two people in their capacity to counsel the Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, to notify them about the serious potential cyber vulnerabilities here in the registration files. Brown also told Kemp's lawyers about it and that the information had already been forwarded to national intelligence officials. Brown told Who What Why, "What is particularly outrageous about this is that I gave this information in confidence to Kemp's lawyers so that something could be done about it without exposing the vulnerability to the public." The Nonpartisan Coalition for Good Governance, an election security advocacy group, has sued Georgia multiple times over the vulnerability of its systems. We have spoken with its executive director and founder, Marilyn Marks, many times about this dreadful job. And believe me, I haven't even scraped the surface of what has been done in Georgia under Brian Kemp's tenure as Secretary of State, and now especially that he's running for governor. So joining us now for the latest on this mess is one of those Democrats who hacked Georgia's voting registration system, apparently. That would be the Republican Marilyn Marks, founder and executive director of the Coalition of Good Governance. They have forced Brian Kemp into court I don't know how many times so far this year regarding voting systems, voters being purged from the rolls or having their registrations rejected by partisan election officials for dubious and or unlawful and unconstitutional reasons. Marilyn Marks, welcome back to the broadcast at this late hour.
Thank you so much, Brad. I appreciate all that great coverage of Georgia. And as you say, you've only scratched the surface.
I really have. I mean, I'm sure I could go for hours. I have gone for hours over the years with you on this. I know you have. So, Marilyn, your response to this firestorm that Brian Kemp set off on Sunday with these clearly false claims that Democrats are hacking into the voter registration system in Georgia. As I mentioned, you're a Republican. All of this comes in the middle of this razor-thin contest between Kemp and his Democratic opponent, Stacey Abrams. Your response to that?
It is a total abuse of his position as Secretary of State. You know, to put on the official Secretary of State website immediately that he is having an investigation done against the Democratic Party, against his opposing party, that is just a complete abuse of the office. Of course, he had absolutely no evidence. There is no evidence. This was all an imagined political stunt. It's a shoot the messenger stunt. It's reckless and outrageous. He did the same thing to Logan Lamb, as you recall, mm-hmm. that when Logan Lamb found the vulnerability in the server at KSU, mm-hmm. he immediately notified authorities. And what did they do? They threatened to, we will crush you, is what he was told. And then they called the FBI
yep.
to try to criminalize what they called his activity as a, quote, perpetrator. He's doing exactly the same thing to the Democratic Party when what they did is take the evidence they had been given,
mm-hmm.
they forwarded it to cybersecurity experts. They know more than I or in a position to figure out whether or not this was truly a vulnerability. So they sent it to the experts. They get back word, yes, this is a problem. And from there, Bruce Brown then was able to contact the Secretary of State's lawyers.
And
he did so, just as you said, they turned this around into a political stunt.
As far as I can tell, this is at least the third time that serious vulnerabilities have been discovered in Georgia's voting system, and Kemp has turned around and claimed that the people trying to warn him about these vulnerabilities were, in fact, hacking his system. And, I noticed that, and I know this, you know this, Marilyn, we have been following this for years, but, you know, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I noticed they changed their headline. Their original headline was on Sunday, "Kemp's office accuses Democrats of hacking." Later on in the day, AJC changed it to, "Without disclosing evidence, Kemp accuses Georgia Democrats of hacking." But of course, the original headline, you know, is what made its way around social media and the Sunday shows all day on Sunday. And when I checked late last night, it was that headline, that original headline, not the updated one, that was at the top of AJC, Atlanta Journal-Constitution's most read stories. Mm-hmm. You know, The AJC is a great newspaper, but they have been doing a terrible job of covering concerns about voting systems in Georgia for many months, if not years now. So I guess we can't be surprised if the national media does as well.
Brad, you're being too kind to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. They were poised with that story, ready to go. It was very clear that Kemp had contacted them and had said, look, as soon as any story comes out, they expected a story, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And when they had the AJC and their sister company, Channel 2, ready to go with the whitewash. And it's more than whitewash. Turning it around and blaming the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And AJC went right for it. And the minute that Bruce Brown, my attorney, read that, he picked up the phone and called the reporters and said, this is shameful. You absolutely need to reverse this story. And he worked with them throughout the day, trying to back them down from printing such a preposterous story.
And yet, the damage was done, and it was out there, and it continues to be out there. You know, I mean, I talked to my parents over the weekend, and they were like, yeah, did you hear about that? The Democrats were trying to hack the state of Georgia.
God.
Yeah. It's maddening. That said, Marilyn, if you read again Who, What, Why, and the great job that Jordan Wilkie and Timothy Pratt did over there, some of the quotes from some of the computer experts, Duncan Buell, who's been at this a long time from South Carolina, he said something I can't say on air, but let's just say he said, holy blank.
I was on the phone with him when he said that.
Yeah, I am. They are stunned by what this could mean, what may have already happened. We don't know to Georgia's voter registration database. But one of my biggest concerns, and I got a lot of them for Tuesday, is these electronic poll book systems going down, not being accessible at all, much less being hacked, even when they work right. In many states like Georgia, which use these e-poll book systems just to sign people in to vote, if those systems go down, Marilyn, people can't vote at all because they don't have paper backup poll books, or their electronic voting system requires sign-in via the electronic poll books. Do you have any confidence that Georgia, or really any of these other states that rely on these e-poll book systems, are adequately prepared for what could go wrong on Tuesday?
Well, I can only speak to Georgia because I don't know what the other states may have done for contingency planning. But as you recall, we have been to the court now twice on this very point, and we have shown the court that there are dozens of people who have been affected just in testimony we have, much less the hundreds or thousands we know must be happening to, who are being sent away from the polls, sent to the wrong polling location, registered in the wrong names, just all sorts of problems that are disenfranchising people because of the so-called glitches, that's what the Secretary of State calls them, in the electronic poll books. Wonder where those glitches came from. But we are very worried. We've taken it to the court twice. We've tried to get Secretary Kemp to do something voluntarily about the problems to keep from disenfranchising people. The court would not address it, and the Secretary would not address it. So we are very worried about, going down is one problem, but also things that aren't so obvious, changing people's data in the system, or people being eliminated from the system.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm expecting problems tomorrow. Perhaps I'll be pleasantly surprised, but we will be out as poll watchers all day tomorrow, and we'll report back, Brad, as we can on what we learn. But we've already seen some things that are concerning. Logan Lamb and I spent 30 minutes last week, one day, doing some poll watching. We saw three DRE machines go down in 30 minutes.
Three touchscreen systems
go down.
Go out. Yeah.
Not go down, just start malfunctioning.
Yep.
It was before our very eyes.
And those are used all across the state. I have heard from people already having similar problems, the screens freezing up, other problems across Georgia. And that's just one state, but I think it's sort of emblematic of the contest right now, the red and blue contest that is going on, these close races, what Republicans seem willing to do to try to win, what Democrats are trying to fight to overcome. Before I let you go, Marilyn, I've been saying now for weeks, given what we have seen coming out of Georgia with all of the voting roll purges, questions about the voting system, questions about their voter registration database, and now this story over the weekend of the wild vulnerabilities on their voter registration site, I have argued that I don't see how, even if Brian Kemp wins this election legitimately on Tuesday, I don't see how that can be, at this point, regarded as legitimate at this point, given the way he has overseen his own election. Your thoughts?
Exactly, Brad. I've been saying the same thing. With this system, as we know, to begin with, at the very best, it is an unreliable, unverifiable system. And the results coming out of it, even when it operates well, are questionable.
Yep.
So given what has gone into it, there's no way that anybody's win can be considered, you know, a solid, good win. And this is going to be true up and down the ballot. I'm sure you've been following that the races down ballot are just about as tight as the gubernatorial race. So we are going to have many races that go to the wire, and that whoever ends up being named to go into that office, it's going to be a question. You know, we do have in Georgia the very unusual condition of it takes 50% plus one ballot to win, or one vote to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are very likely going to have runoffs.
Yeah, there's probably going to be runoffs in December for a number of races in Georgia, maybe even this gubernatorial contest. I suspect we will be talking to you much more in the days ahead, no matter what happens. Marilyn Marks, please check out her good works on the Twitters. She is Marilyn R. Marks, the number one. Marilyn R. Marks, one. Yeah. She runs coalitionforgoodgovernance.org. She has been sending up flares about all of these problems and taking action in court, which I know is not cheap. So please consider, a lot of candidates are out there, begging you for their money in the election season. Please remember the election integrity folks like coalitionforgoodgovernance.org who are actually fighting for you no matter what side of the aisle you're on, fighting for
Thank
voters.
Thank you so much, Brad.
Thank you, Marilyn. Stay safe. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Well, I know we'll talk soon.
Bye. I bet we will. Thank you. Okay, let me take a quick break here. Running late, as usual, here on the Bradcast. When we come back, I want to see if we have time to play this clip from Oprah Winfrey, because I think it will be a great inspiration for Election Day. And then I'd love to hear from you, your calls at 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, particularly people who have never voted in a midterm, but you're doing so now. Why is that? And if you're not, why is that? I'd love to hear from you. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is your Bradcast.
So let your vote make the difference. Let your vote count. Let your vote speak for you. When we all unite, I know for sure a change is going to come.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change going to come.
Oh, boy, I hope so. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Your calls in a moment at 818-985-5735. I'd love to hear from folks who haven't voted in a midterm before but have done so now or plan to do so now. And also, if you have not, why would that be? 818-985-5735. We'll try to get through a bunch of folks as quickly as we can. But as long as Brian Kemp has given himself so much free publicity this weekend by lying about Democrats in Georgia and making it harder for voters to vote in the Peach State, I'll note that his His opponent, Stacey Abrams, the Democrat who would be the first African-American female to become governor in the United States, she put out a fundraising email on Friday before the nightmares I was just talking about. She said, "My parents had to fight for their right to vote in the Jim Crow South. As a teenager, my dad was arrested for helping black folks register to vote. My mother posted his bail. Now their daughter is running for governor of Georgia." Let that sink in for a moment, she wrote. Generations of hard work, most of which went unrecognized, have culminated in this moment right now. She said, "I'll be frank, we're running against an opponent who believes that voting is a privilege and not a right." He certainly does, and he's acting that way, and he's trying to keep as many people as possible, certain people, from voting and exercising their right. Stacey Abrams says, "We grew up steeped in Georgia's history of civil rights activism. We were taught to fight for what we believe in by generations of leaders who came before us, including our own grandparents, parents and grandparents, so we will not back down." Glad to hear it. Also late last week, Oprah Winfrey hit the stump with Abrams in Georgia. And you might have heard or seen some of this, but I think this passage from Oprah deserves to be heard again. If you didn't hear it, a little bit longer passage here, as we are just hours away from polls opening on Tuesday.
"And when I stand in the polls, I do what Maya Angelou says. I come as one, but I stand as 10,000. For all those who paved the way that we might have the right to vote. And for anybody here who has an ancestor who didn't have the right to vote, and you are choosing not to vote, wherever you are in this state, in this country, you are dishonoring your family. You are disrespecting and disregarding their legacy, their suffering and their dreams when you don't vote. So honor your legacy. Honor your legacy. Honor your right to citizenship in this, which is the greatest country in the world." The greatest country in the world. And the right to vote is like the crown we all get to wear. Maya used to say, "Baby, your crown has been paid for, so put it on your head and wear it." So your crown's been paid for. The right to vote is your crown. And there are tight races all over this country that depend on all of us giving honor to our greatest democratic right and privilege. So let your vote make the difference. Let your vote count. Let your vote speak for you. When we all unite, I know for sure a change is going to come.
Oprah Winfrey out campaigning with Stacey Abrams, Democratic gubernatorial candidate in Georgia last week. She talked about how difficult it was for her own family, Oprah did, for her own family, her grandfather to cast a vote in the Jim Crow South. It was very moving. We didn't have time to play all of it, unfortunately, because I do want to get to some of your calls. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-KPFK. Let's take a quick break and we will come back. I want to hear from some of you. I know some people had problems voting, have been having problems voting in early voting all across the country, problems registering, etc. But particularly if you have never voted in a midterm before, but you are going to vote this year or have already voted, I'd love to hear why. Why this year? What changed your mind to get you out to the polls? 818-985-5735. And from those of you who won't be voting for some reason this year, I'd love to hear you explain yourself as well. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast.
Can we stop pretending that the polls are a good indicator of what people are going to do and how they're going to vote? Our elections aren't even a good indicator of people's votes.
If you don't like who's in there, vote them out. That's what election day is all about.
Yes, it is.
The biggest gun we've got is called the ballot box. So if you don't like like who's in there, vote 'em out.
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 Vote 'em out. And when they're gone, we'll sing and dance and shout. They bring some new ones in, and we'll start that show again. And if you don't like who's in there, vote 'em out.
Vote him out. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thank you, Willie Nelson. A song that he released along with the candidacy of Beto O'Rourke, the Democratic candidate running for U.S. Senate against Ted Cruz down in Texas. If you live in Texas, if you know anyone in Texas, if you know anyone in North Dakota, Missouri, Arizona, Indiana, Florida, Montana, Tennessee, Texas, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, West Virginia, New Jersey, or Minnesota, you know what? Maybe today is a great day to call them and see if they plan to vote and encourage them to do so if they're not planning to vote. Anyone who tells you that this is all figured out, that the Democrats, oh, maybe they'll take the House, maybe they'll do well in governor's races, no way they're going to take the U.S. Senate. If they're telling you that, they are just making it up. They do not know. It's a tough road, yes, for Democrats, but nobody knows how this is going to play out by Tuesday and beyond, when there's likely to be a whole bunch of reportedly very, very close races. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Let's go to Greg in Los Angeles. Hey, Greg, welcome to the Bradcast. Are you going to be voting this year?
Brad, I'm not going to be voting this year.
Why?
I've been disenfranchised by the United States government. This happened in the 1970s. Very often, governments, they punish dissent, and that's what happened in my case. And so I just want people to realize that amongst all the other problems we're having with voting, with gerrymandering, with felons not being able to vote, with black box voting, all of the cross-checking and all of this, the government actually will take individuals and refuse to allow them to vote, denying them their citizenship.
Why was you were denied? You tried to register to vote here in California, and you were not allowed to vote?
My citizenship is not recognized by the United States government, by the Department of Secretary of State. So if I did attempt to vote, I'd be deemed doing something that was illegal.
Where were you born?
I was born in Santa Rosa, California.
So you're a U.S. citizen?
I consider myself a citizen, but the United States Secretary of State deems that I relinquished my right, my citizenship, even though not only did I not want to do that, I didn't even know it was possible to do such a thing.
Greg, I
want the public to know that disenfranchisement of dissent is very, it's an active, ongoing activity in the United States government.
Okay, the Secretary of State cannot take your citizenship away from you. As a U.S. citizen, as someone who was born here...
They say that I renounced it, but I never had any intent of doing that.
That is...
There's a long history of doing it. They denied Paul Robeson use of his passport. I have friends in the anti-war movement who are put on no-fly lists. There's all kinds of ways of inhibiting people, and in my case, not allowing me to vote.
Okay, if you say, and when you registered to vote out here in California and you were denied?
I did not do that because, as I just told you, if I did do that, it would be deemed that I was doing something illegal.
Okay.
I live in California with a green card.
Okay, send me some information on that, Greg. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. I'd like to learn more about it. Something doesn't sound right to me there, so I'd love to hear about it. I could be wrong.
I'd be happy to explain it to you in detail, Brad. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. That's odd. Marion, I don't think you can renounce your citizenship and literally not be a citizen anymore, but maybe I'm wrong. It's happened before. Marion, welcome to the Bradcast.
Hi.
Hey.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on the program. I just wanted to make a suggestion.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a suggestion. I know it's kind of late, but I've been passing it around.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking that we should have international observers.
We do have international observers.
Oh, we do? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we have them. They come from various places, from the UN group that oversees voting. Now, a lot of places, for example, back, I remember, in 2004 in Ohio, the Republican Secretary of State at the time said that he would not allow international observers to observe in Ohio. You've had, you know, folks like Brian Kemp, we've been talking about here in Georgia, who has said international observers are not allowed. But we've got international observers. We've got observers. You can be an observer. You can be at your polling place tomorrow. I would encourage you to do that, to observe, to help people, to help voters vote. But we still cannot see inside a computer system. So unless we actually hand count, hand marked paper ballots, we can't know for sure if the results as reported by the computers are accurate.
Right. So I just think that it's if things are not going the way they should go, I think that we should protest, you know, such as what has done, you know, been done in other countries, you know, the results are inaccurate and there needs to be another election.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something that we should consider.
I'm in favor of protest.
Because this is the supposed land of the free and home of the brave.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
One man, one vote.
Sounds good to me, but I have watched election after election, at least going back to George W. Bush in 2000 presidential election, where you have results that nobody can verify, nobody has bothered to verify. Nobody knows if, in fact, a president of the United States legitimately won or lost. Anyway, Mary, I appreciate the call and the thoughts and, yes, the protest. We'll see you in the streets. Keep the rest of your week open.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Okay.
Let me go to Jim in L.A. Hey, Jim, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Brad. Thank you for being so mildly brilliant. And I thank Tom Harbin for introducing me to you. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Blaise Pompain, the wisest man in all media, that I missed the event. I got trapped in traffic. But
that was an event, a KPFK station event over the weekend. I just wanted for people to know. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
But you have a solution about vote counting, Desi tells me on the screener here?
Yes, I do, sir. And I'm a bit of a dinosaur. I'm an old hippie, and I'm not up on all the internet stuff. But yes, it's count your vote. Count your vote. Have two people at every polling place in America to volunteers with affidavits and with a little clicker, you know, where umpires used to have that. Count the balls and the strikes.
Yep.
Count every person going in. Count every, and then have this affidavit for Democrats to sign that say, I voted 100% Democrat. But count your vote. Take responsibility.
Well, hey, Hippie Jim, let me give you one thought on that. The number of people going into the polling place, that can be counted. That can be counted now. That is counted. And the signatures on the poll books are compared to the number of ballots that are cast at each polling location, or at least they are supposed to. That is supposed to be a public process. That much we can do. The problem is not ballot boxes being stuffed, as Republicans like to pretend happen. The problem is we have ballots, we have voters, we know we have the right number of voters, but their ballots, even if it's the right number of ballots, they're counted by computers and nobody bothers to find out if the computers actually recorded the results as they were actually cast by the voters.
Okay, Brad, here's a simple solution to that.
Yeah.
They say it's expensive to do all that. How about a cardboard box and a piece of paper?
Yeah.
How expensive is that?
It's,
you know?
Yeah, it's not expensive at all, Jim. As a matter of fact, it's cheaper than using the crappy computer tabulators that we use in all 50 states. That's the solution, but it's not going to happen until people learn about these systems and raise holy hell. And I need to remind people, here in Los Angeles, we are moving after this election to a 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting system with barcoded ballots that cannot be read by humans. Yes, Jim. Yes, and I've been trying to warn about this for I don't know how many years, specifically here in Los Angeles. Anyway, Jim, I got to run. I do appreciate the call, your thoughts. Pay attention. This is not going to fix itself. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that call. And also calling me mildly brilliant. I mildly thank you for that. Speaking of which, a journalist and radio show host, Brad Friedman, who has investigated and written about computerized election systems for almost two decades, warns that if electronic poll books, quote, go down and these places don't have paper backups, it will be a disaster. In the case of a denial of service attack meant to knock out the internet on election day, what do you do? Says Friedman, there are no do-overs in elections. That's a quote from today's New York Book Review. Jennifer Cohen writing an article, Voting Machines, What Could Possibly Go Wrong? She notes that Friedman laments, we do not have a system where supporters of the winners and losers can walk away and know the election was legitimately won or lost. As Friedman says, you do not need to be a fancy state-sponsored hacking organization to do it. It's one guy on the inside, whether an election official or voting machine company or contractor or whatever. It doesn't take a nation state to flip an election. That was that mildly brilliant Brad Friedman at New York Books, nybooks.org. I'll link over to Jennifer Cohn's story so you can find out what she's talking about. What could possibly go wrong, she asks, and she answers. And we may all get that answer on Tuesday. We will be buckling up and following things as closely as we can on Election Day. But as I've warned, the big concern, at least to me, is what comes after Election Day. With so many tight races, I've never seen so many close races. According to the polls, anyway, pre-election polls across the country, in Senate, in the U.S. House, in the gubernatorial races. And it's going to mean people are going to have to pay attention in state after state to how results are counted, how they're tabulated, if there are hand recounts, et cetera, et cetera. Drop me an email if you see any problems on Election Day. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. But call 866-OUR-VOTE to report any problems you have casting your vote or if you have any questions on Election Day. That's 866-OUR-VOTE, the National Election Protection Hotline. Run by the Civil Rights Commission under law. All right, my thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my guest today, Marilyn Marks of Coalition for Good Governance, and to you for spending a portion of today with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am the Brad Blog. Until we meet again, do not leave without casting a ballot on Tuesday. You have the right to vote, even provisionally. Stay in line. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, America.